Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Is it text number 23? Satsevaya dirgaya pi. Yes? Satsevaya dirgaya pi. Jata mayi dvida matihi. Hitva vadyam imam lokam. Gantha majjanatam asi satsevaya dirgayapi jata mayi dhrida matihi hitva vadyam imam lokam. Gantha manjanatamasi. Satsevaya.
By service of the Absolute Truth.
Adirgaya.
For some days.
Api.
Even.
Jata.
Having attained
mayi
unto me
dridha
firm
matihi
intelligence
hitva
having given up
avadeyam
deplorable
imam
this
Lokam,
material world.
Gantha,
going to.
Mat janatam,
my associates.
Asi,
become. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. By service of the Absolute Truth, even for a few days, a devotee attains firm and fixed intelligence in me. Consequently, he goes on to become my associate in the transcendental world after giving up the present, deplorable material worlds. Purport. Serving the Absolute Truth means rendering service under the Absolute Personality of Godhead, under the direction of the bona fide spiritual master who is a transparent via medium between the Lord and the neophyte devotee. The neophyte devotee has no ability to approach the Absolute Personality of Godhead by the strength of his present imperfect material senses. And therefore, under the direction of the spiritual master, he is trained in transcendental service of the Lord. And by such training, even for some days, the neophyte devotee gets intelligence in such transcendental service, which leads him ultimately to get free from perpetual inhabitation in the material worlds, and to be promoted to the transcendental world, to become one of the liberated associates of the Lord in the kingdom of God. Majjanatam, to become one of my men. This is the goal that is offered to Narada. Now, he's a very special person, and he's actually an eternal associate already. He's Nityasiddha, actually. So it's no wonder that Narada has that in store for him, that he will be reinstated in his what's actually his eternal position anyway? What is amazing is that this also applies to us. Prabhupada talks not about Narada, he talks about neophyte devotee. A neophyte devotee can also achieve this perfection, maybe not as quickly as Narada. So, whatever you think about yourself, at least you're a neophyte devotee. Maybe you think you're not even a neophyte devotee, but you're initiated, engaged in service, or getting ready to be initiated, engaged in service. That's a neophyte devotee. You may want to call yourself something worse, but objectively, that's on the devotional level of advancement. And even by adirgaya, short-term training in devotional practice, one will be put on the path to this perfection of becoming an associate of the Supreme Lord. Or actually, just like Narada, just simply regaining your original position. At least the way Prabhupada teaches it, the way I understand it, we were always associates of Krishna. We had our relationship with him. It's not something we didn't know or never had before. We lost it. We gave it up. Now we're in covered consciousness. What we need to do is regain and go back where we were before. We need to gain spiritual intelligence for this. Tattva-jnana is a requirement in the beginning. Although jnana and karma, according to Rupa Goswami, are not angas of devotional service, but you need to have transcendental knowledge of your identity and Krishna's identity. This is a required basis for devotional practice. If you don't have any understanding of what Krishna is, you like him, but you don't understand what he is, and you don't care to understand. You're just sentimentally, enraptured with the little boy of Vrindavan who steals the butter and pees on the floor in the ladies' houses. And you don't care what he is. You just love him. You think you love him. That's sentimental. If you don't have any proper tattva-jnana, siddhantic understanding of who Krishna really is, then that sentiment will just make you turn into a sahaja, a cheap devotee, who cannot do the right things because he has no proper intelligence. He'll make all the wrong choices. He'll associate with the wrong people, get wrong guidance, and maybe commit serious offenses and maybe go to hell. At least he won't make solid progress as a sentimental, cheap devotee. What's required is to get factual knowledge. You don't become a neophyte devotee unless it's been revealed to you what Krishna is and what we are in relationship to Krishna. Unless we have some basic understanding, we're not even going to become neophyte devotees. I'm talking about the person who's not yet practicing any devotional service. He needs some knowledge to even start his devotional practice. Otherwise, what's the purpose of approaching a guru? Prabhupada emphasizes in the purport, serving the absolute truth means rendering service unto the absolute personality of Godhead under the direction of the bona fide spiritual master. Now, it's not that the spiritual master, treats us like a donkey and kicks us and whips us to make us go in the right direction. A horse or an ass has to be beaten. You use a whip. An elephant, you have to stick him with an ankusha. Dumb animals, even cows, you have to at least, you don't want to be cruel to cows, but you have to at least show them a stick and wave it in their face to make them do the necessary, to give some milk. A stubborn cow doesn't want to give the milk. So you wave a stick in its face, and it's scared of the stick and gives the milk. Or you have to threaten to give it an injection in the backside. Yeah. Or even do it. in order to, you know, force the cow to give the milk. So even the gentle cow has, it's a dumb animal. It has to be forced. Argumentum ad baculum. For an animal or a person with only animal intelligence, the only reasoning is argumentum ad baculum. That's, an Aristotelian term. Argument from the stick. Baculum. But that's not how human beings are supposed to be brought into the process of devotional service. It may be in the history of Europe that, you know, the Khan of Kievskaya Rus, you know, accepted Christianity, and on the point of the sword, all of the citizens were forced to also become Christians. That's not our practice. You want to become a devotee, we don't force you to become a devotee. What's the use? You have children, you want them to be devotees also. But we have so much experience. If you force the children against their will, they'll come to hate devotional service and hate you. It doesn't work. Force doesn't work, especially since Krishna doesn't approve of it. He wants people to become voluntarily his devotees and to understand what they're doing. Not just we round up all the citizens and we become dictator of Uttar Pradesh, win the election, and then disband the assembly and become dictator of Uttar Pradesh, and then force everybody to become a Vaishnava. That will deprive you, will take away all your property and throw you in jail for the rest of your life if you don't become a Vaishnava and chant Hare Krishna. It doesn't work like that. We may want some devotees to be elected to office, but that's not what we're going to do. The Prabhupada sometimes joked about it, you know, but he didn't mean it seriously that we're going to take such a strategy. Because it's not Krishna's strategy. He wants voluntary devotees who know what they're doing. He doesn't need robots. He can arrange for the material energy to build him robots if that's what he wants. Mechanical men who just do everything because they're programmed to do it and they have no will and no choice. Krishna wants us as jivas to exercise our choice, to voluntarily make the right choice, to cooperate with him. And the fact that we could have made the wrong choice makes it more valuable. Makes it something that Krishna appreciates. You could have refused to surrender to me, but you chose to surrender. And then Krishna likes that. And he accepts that person as devotee. So, and what's the use of a spiritual master if you're not going to, first of all, start lay the foundation of your devotional life, a foundation of tattva-gyanam? Because what else is a spiritual master for? It's not somebody you just bribe to get Krishna to give you what you want. You know, you go to his agent, the spiritual master, and bribe him, flatter him, do some service to bribe and flatter him, and extort from him blessings. And then on the strength of those blessings, you've got Krishna under your control. That's not the proper procedure. What do you do with the spiritual master? What use is he? Looking at it very utilitarianly, what is the use of a spiritual master? It's a expensive thing to maintain, a spiritual master. You don't know what he's going to demand from you. How much is going to cost you? How much energy, effort, and money is going to cost to have a spiritual master? People like to keep buffaloes because they're cheaper and less troublesome than cows. Cows cost more money and they demand more attention and they're more peculiar in their personalities than buffaloes. So therefore very few people nowadays keep cows, they keep buffaloes. And because of their lust, they keep wife and children, but they're also very expensive proposition. And a spiritual master can be even more expensive than a wife and a child. You don't know what he's going to demand from you. So why make such an investment? Looking at it very selfishly, why make such an investment in a spiritual master? What are you going to get from him? What do we chant in the Gayatri Mantra? blank, fill in the blank. Blank Gurave Namaha. What's the missing word? The Bij Mantra? Aing. What does Aing mean? Knowledge Bij. So that's what the spiritual master is good for. That's what he can provide. Knowledge. Or transcendental intelligence. It's not information that you can use to pass your exams. It's transcendental knowledge that lets you understand your spiritual relationship with Krishna. Transcendental knowledge. Buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. The spiritual master can deliver that. Krishna is talking in the Gita about himself delivering it as the supersoul. But the spiritual master also performs this function of the supersoul externally. There may be some people who can communicate directly with the supersoul or can so please Krishna that he gives them directly transcendental knowledge. But the normal procedure is to get it from a spiritual master who is the external representative of the supersoul. He gives you transcendental intelligence by which you can understand Krishna, your relationship with Krishna, and how to act in that relationship. That's what we require. Krishna can show himself to us. We're in his place. We're in the holy dham where he's eternally present. He's hiding behind the next tree with all his friends. But they're not showing themselves simply because we don't fit in. We don't want to play with that boy. He's very crude. He doesn't know how to play properly. So they don't want to play with us because we don't fit in. We don't have transcendental intelligence. What's the use of Krishna and the cowherd boy showing themselves to us? They live down the street. You know, just a short walk down the street, they're playing. Or maybe they're playing right here on this property. But they don't show themselves to us, at least not to me, because I'm not fit in the sense I don't know how to join their play. I don't have the transcendental intelligence, how to play their games, how to deal with them. That's the only thing lacking. Ultimately, we may have so many things we have to do to develop that, to be given that intelligence. We may have to work hard and run around the world and preach. But it's the ultimate purpose is that we, and maybe others, can develop the intelligence by which we can join in Krishna's games. Learn how to play the games. Learn how to deal with Krishna and his devotees. That's the transcendental intelligence. That's the knowledge we need. First of all, theoretical knowledge. Sambandha gyan. Theoretical. You have to understand who you're going to be playing with here. Who is this Krishna and who are his friends and who are you? How do you fit in? You know, how do you from Kazakhstan or Latvia fit in with Krishna's games in Vrindavan? What's your place in this? This is sambandha gyan, theoretical understanding of everybody's identity. Then the neophyte can progress to a practicing devotee, take initiation, come up to the second class platform, and start to understand abhideya, how to actually act in the service of Krishna under regulations of guru and shastra. It's like you can take your dog out in the street, but you have to hold him on a leash. It's not a law in most places that dogs are not allowed on the street. They will be shot on sight. Beijing, maybe they're so strict. You know, once they killed all the birds in the city because they're dirty. They just killed all the birds. Of course, after that, they had a lot of worms around after killing all the birds. And in Singapore, they killed all the cats. Yeah, but we don't have such a law. Most countries, it's illegal to take a dog out on the street. He will be shot on sight. No, I mean, people will not stand for that. They love their dogs. The citizens, if they have any freedom, any power, they won't stand for such a law. So they have to let people take the dogs out, but they have to keep them on a leash. And if the dog does something, you have to pick it up.
In some places. Like that, very similar to that. We're allowed to practice worshiping. You know, we're brought out in the spirituals, on the spiritual street, and allowed to try to serve Krishna. But we have to be on a leash. We're not allowed to run free, because we really don't know how to act properly. We have to be kept on a leash of the instructions of Guru and Shastra. And if we do something not nice, they have to pick it up. They're responsible for our misdeeds. Or the guru is. Like that, we're on a leash. Under the strictures of the guidance of guru and shastra, we're allowed to learn how to practice serving Krishna. That's abhideya level. Which makes us fit, eventually, for realizing the prayojana, spontaneous love of God. And when you have that love, you don't need rules and regulations. You don't need to be ruled and regulated. You're regulated by love. That doesn't mean you give up relationship with Guru and Shastra, but the relationship changes when it's when you have actual love of God. Your relationship with Krishna becomes real, and your relationship with the Vaishnavas and the Vaishnava Shastra becomes real. Now we learn the Bhagavatam to learn the basics and to get a view of what's bad in material life. Hitva vajyam. This material existence is deplorable. Narada is telling us that in no uncertain words. Avadyam. Actually, avadyam usually means that you can't say anything bad about it. But literally it just means you can't say anything about it. Avadya, not to be talked about. So the usual sense is you can't complain about it. There's no grounds for complaint. But you can take it the other way around, that there's nothing good to say about it. So that's the sense being used here in Prabhupada's translation of avadya. It's not that this world is so nice you can't say anything about it, bad about it. Who can mean to say that about the material world, who knows the material world? Only a fool would say that the material world is so nice that you can't say anything bad about it. Everybody's got something bad to say about this world. Everybody. You show me one person who doesn't have any complaints about life in this world. It's arranged that everybody's got plenty of complaints. Maya makes sure of it. Just like in the prison, it's senseless to make it so comfortable that you'd like to be there and you don't want to leave. In Sweden, they may give you a television set, your own TV set in your cell, and a carpet on the floor, whatever they give. But then you don't want to leave. You'd rather be in the prison than on a cold street. What's the sense of that? Make the prison comfortable and nice. It's supposed to be a place where you've got plenty of complaints. And Maya arranges for that in everybody's life. Sentimental government may make a comfortable prison, but Maya doesn't do that. Maya doesn't make it comfortable for anybody. So it is, if it's avadya, Narada calls it avadya, we must take it in the other sense, that you can't say anything good about it. Or Prabhupada's translation, it's deplorable. How was your trip to Delhi? And the answer is deplorable. Then you know that it wasn't pleasant. There was nothing good about it. Everything wrong happened. You don't even have to ask about the details. Narada just sums up material existence. It's deplorable. Are we convinced of that? Or is there something we still like about it? Do we have something good to say about the material world? That the computers are getting better and better every year? The girls are very pretty. Anyway, the olives taste good. If we think there's something nice to say about this world, then we're not really spiritually realized, or not fully. We're still in Maya. If we think there's anything nice to say about this world, we have to learn to rise above that and understand properly how deplorable this whole existence is. Then we can give it up. Otherwise, we're not going to want to give it up. Even though we know theoretically, and everybody around us, all the other devotees are working hard to give it up. But we have attachments. And we're not ready to give it up. Then we're stuck until we rise above that, those misunderstandings. Misunderstanding that there's something nice about this world. Now I'm a brahmachari, I'm miserable, but when I get married, I'll be happy. Now I'm a grihastha, I'm miserable, same person, 3 years later. Now I'm a grihastha, I'm miserable, but when I take sannyas, I'll be happy. You won't be happy with that consciousness, no matter what color clothes you wear. It can be green or pink or orange or white, or you can carry a danda or 10 dandas. It won't make any difference. You won't be happy with that kind of consciousness, that there's something good and nice in this material world. Narada has realized, he's seen it all. He's only 5 years old, but he's been around and he's seen it all. It's disgusting, deplorable, and he has no reason, no desire to remain much longer in this world. Therefore, he can get out quickly. This is transcendental intelligence. Two levels. The higher level, it's to understand how to deal with the absolute truth. But before you can rise to that level, you have to give up your affection for the material, lower nature. We have to give up our affinity for Maya, because we'll never understand how to actually have a relationship with the absolute truth until we give up our relationship with his inferior energy. Just like you have one girlfriend, it's not a good example of brahmacharis, but anyway. And you know, you someone else you'd like to change girlfriends. Well, you got to give up the relationship with the first before you can establish the relationship with the second. If nothing else, the first will give you trouble. You start, fooling around with the second. So until we give up our relationship with Maya, we cannot really begin to properly establish our relationship with Krishna and his internal energy. If we're in an intermediate position, we got 1 foot in Maya, 1 foot in the spiritual world, it's quite awkward. Maybe we can't avoid that because we can only gradually give up our attachments and take shelter of Krishna. But it's a very awkward position to have 1 foot in Maya and 1 foot in the transcendence. And you can expect embarrassment and difficulty in such an awkward situation. Therefore, it's said, Dvaimau Purusha Loke Nivritaha. So two kinds of people in the world who are completely satisfied. This is a statement somewhere in the Bhagavatam. The Mudha, the complete fool, and the person who has transcended all attachments, the Paramahamsa. Prabhupada says it, the pig and the Paramahamsa. They're the only two people in the world that are happy. Everyone else in the middle is in anxiety, including the foolish materialists in the modes of ignorance and passion. Maya makes sure that they're unhappy. And then the aspiring Vaishnavas, they're also having a hard time because they got 1 foot in Maya and 1 foot in transcendence. They're struggling between worlds. That's also anxiety. Only the pig and the Paramahamsa are peaceful and satisfied. The way out is to accept the guidance of Krishna's representatives, the spiritual masters, receive knowledge from them, act on that knowledge, be faithful and honest in one's relationship with the Vaishnavas. And then Krishna will think that maybe he can trust us also. Show ourselves to be trustworthy by the way that we relate to the Vaishnavas, especially our spiritual masters. Follow them and serve them faithfully. Then Krishna will give us Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mamupayanti Te. The spiritual master, as Krishna's agent, will give us his blessings, and Krishna will, as the Supersoul, will bestow the transcendental understanding by which we can understand him and how to deal with him properly. Okay. Any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
There is a statement in Srimad Bhagavatam where Kapiladeva says that a devotee becomes udasina or indifferent to this material world.
Yes.
What comes first, indifference and then detachment, or detachment has to come somehow or other first in devotee's life?
Well,
and how exactly does it come in Vaishnava's life?
Well, detachment, vairagya, means having no passion, negative or positive. That's what vairagya means. So real detachment is indifference. This stage of being disgusted, that's inferior. That's immature. Because repulsion is just the opposite side of the same coin of attraction. It can turn into attraction. You know, I hate women, and I think about it a lot, which means I'm thinking about women a lot, and I can get you in trouble. They're by nature Maya's agents of attraction. So if you think about them in a negative way, you're thinking about them. You're meditating on women. So if you hate women, you're meditating on them. So you really have to become indifferent. It's just a bag of bones, and it means nothing to you. That's indifference. So yes, it's the being disgusted is inferior. It's effective because it can help you get out of your gross Maya, but then you're still in Maya in your mind. So to clear out all the Maya, you have to become indifferent. Yes.
In the early days, and not too early, but like in the beginning of the 90s, I remember some devotees in Russia, they deliberately went to crematoriums, and they were given access to see how dead bodies, the bodies of devotees burn there, especially ladies. Some brahmacharis would go there just to develop this kind of
to see the bodies burn.
Yeah, this kind of detachment. So my question is, to which extent devotees should really implore such things and meditate on what is otherwise a very unpalatable truth about this material world, like meditation on the bodies as bags of stool and bones? There are such descriptions given in the Bhagavatam, but I wonder to which extent devotees should apply these things in their lives to develop a detachment, because it may looks like...
There's a term for that, shmashana vairagya. The vairagya you feel in the crematorium. The problem with it is when you get out of the crematorium and you see the female bodies that aren't burned, you're still attracted to them. In fact, people who are in ghastly situations still have their urges for sense gratification. They're in a war and they see bodies being blown up all over the place, including their best friends, and still they're lusty. Even in that condition, it's practically contradictory to be in such a disgusting situation and still be attracted to flesh. You're seeing flesh and bones for what it really is when the body is blown up, when your buddy is blown to pieces and you see his guts all over the place. It's disgusting, and still, the next female you see, you're attracted to. It's the same guts, but Maya is very strong. And what to speak of if you just pay a short visit to the crematorium and then go home again. It's short-term renunciation. That's the problem. It's not on a solid basis. Yeah, it's recommended. Shankaracharya recommends it. It's okay. It's really for people who are not very developed spiritually. It gets them started. It's not a solid basis for renunciation. You have to build it on a solid basis of knowledge. And param drishta nivartite, you have to have a higher taste. You may know how disgusting this world is, and still you want to enjoy it, because you have nothing better to replace it with. You have to enjoy something, so you enjoy all the disgusting things, even though you know they're disgusting, because you have nothing better to replace them with. So what's required is param drishta. You have to experience a higher taste, a higher pleasure. Then you can become properly renounced. One should take sannyas when he's actually experiencing spiritual satisfaction. Then he's ready for sannyas. I'm sorry, Nityananda Prabhu had a question, but now he's busy. Okay, anyway, Anything else? Yes.
It says in this verse, Satsevaya Adirgaya.
Short term.
Adirgaya. So just
Prabhupada says for a few days.
Just for a few days. And it seems the way it's said is just by a few days of devotional service, one can go back to God. And
well, how many is a few? In Narada's case, it might be 50 days. In our case, it may be 50 million days. You know, what few is depends on the individual. For us, it may mean 50 million days. A lifetime, or a couple of lifetimes.
Can it be interpreted also that, for example, a new bhakta joins and he's very enthusiastic and he's doing all that's like asked. He follows all the rules.
Don't promise him he'll become perfect in a certain number of weeks.
Yeah, we don't.
Can't promise it.
We don't promise that, but he's sincerely trying, and then somehow or other, he gets some accident and dies within like a month of practicing devotional service.
What happens? I'm sorry.
An accident happens and he dies within after a month of. But he was doing everything like chanting 16 rounds, yes. Going out on book distribution.
Great.
So can he, for example, go back to Godhead because he was on the right path and he was going there?
Well, what's more likely if he didn't get a chance to make much advancement in that 1 month? He'll take birth in the family of devotees. Is that good enough? And he'll get very good opportunities to continue his practice. Krishna can choose to take him back even though he's not at all ready. That's Krishna's choice. But normally Krishna would expect us to finish the sadhana program. So that means coming back again, but coming back under very favorable circumstances. So, the new bhakta dies after 1 month. You can be euphemistic and say he's gone back to Godhead, but more realistically, he's probably going to take birth again as a devotee. Prabhupada never said, I promise you, you'll go back to Godhead after 1 month of practice. He didn't promise, he said one lifetime, not 1 month. Yes?
Yeah. Just to complete that point about disgust, it's actually praiseworthy when it is connected to Krishna. Then it turns into bibhatsarasa. And then that disgust becomes a part of confession, becomes a part of repentance. Then only the disgust becomes transcendental.
Yes.
If the disgust is not a part of confession and repentance,
yes.
Then it's palgu vairagya.
Yes.
But it also has its transcendental aspect, disgust.
The actual bibhatsarasa requires that you have developed your own sthayi bhava, that you've come to the level of prema. Bibhatsa and the other secondary rasas cannot be a sthayi bhava, so you have to have one of the five or a mixture, and then you can add bibhatsa to the mix once you've attained prema. So that's only for a privileged few. You can maybe have a shadow of bibhatsa rasa even without being perfect, and that could be very effective, yes. But the real thing, you have to have prema first to experience it.
When a devotee might not have developed prema, and then he might still feel disgust and be really focused on Krishna while he is disgusted. It means he might offer prayer that, oh Krishna,
yes.
how unfortunate that I was attracted to this horrible body instead of, serving you. And then and he might not be on the level of prema, but this bibhatsa, that disgust expressed by him, is it not bibhatsarasa?
No, I don't think so. I think what you're describing, I think, is better termed material disgust, effectively dovetailed in Krishna's service. You can call it bibhatsa, but it's the word being used in its material sense. If I see someone blown up, his body blown up and his guts all over the place, most people will be disgusted by seeing it. even if they have no spiritual realization, no matter who they are, no matter how degraded their consciousness is, it's a disgusting thing to see. So that's a material bibhatsa. And that kind of material bibhatsa, or something mixed, you know, it's a material disgust, but it's compounded with serious interest in spiritual development, then that serious interest in Krishna consciousness helps you dovetail that material disgust in a spiritual way. Just like, you know, we dovetail so many material things in Krishna's service because we have some spiritual intelligence being given to us by Guru and Shastra. So with their guidance, we can use our material disgust, we can dovetail it in Krishna's service. I think that's the part, at least on the level you're describing it, someone who doesn't have prema or isn't very advanced in devotional service, it helps them become advanced. So on certain levels, it's very useful. On the lower levels especially, when we're really still very attached to Maya, better we get disgusted about it. Even better, we learn to hate women. It's better than being than loving women. You know, it gets us away from them. But later on, we should learn to just be indifferent. So the disgust on the lower levels of development, it's very useful. Being disgusted.
If I may continue this, the question about this topic. Rupa Goswami, in one of the qualifications for devotional service, he says that one has to be neither too attached nor too renounced to qualify as a beginning bhakti. Yeah, Krishna says
to he's a candidate.
And in Bhagavad Gita, he says oftentimes, he's not too attached, not too hateful to things.
Yes.
So once again, looks like even that disgust, if it's excessive, may even become an obstacle, just like as much as an excessive attachment could be.
Yeah, if we're too disgusted, we'll just want to commit suicide. You know, life is meaningless. It's so disgusting. I can't take it anymore. I can't even tolerate living anymore. So you have to kill yourself. So suicidal consciousness is not conducive to devotional service. And if you're too disgusted, you'll be suicidal. Yes.
So when generally when we have different problems, we pray to the Lord that we are undergoing problems, so please remove those obstacles and problems so that we can advance properly. But actually, as we explained, there will always be problems in the material world, different kinds of problems and different levels.
Yes.
Until we become the highest, we reach the Prayojana, become Paramahamsas. So is it proper to, what is the use in praying to the Lord if we have problems? Anyway, if there are going to be problems.
Again, it's suitable on the lower levels. It means at least you're going to Krishna with your problems. You shouldn't be worried about the problems, but at least if you're praying to Krishna about them, then you're turning your attention to Krishna. For a person on a low level of development, that's useful. On a high level of development, you should pray to Krishna, Vipadak Santutaksha Shrad, please send me these troubles more and more. But that's advanced consciousness. So it's appropriate on a certain level to pray for relief from distress. At least you're praying to the Supreme Lord for it. Arta Gagasa Artarti. So the Arta person is a neophyte who's using his distress as an impetus to approach Krishna. That's good for him. But that's a raw neophyte. That's just a beginner. He's supposed to progress beyond that. If you're always in distress, you know, distress brought me to devotional service, so I better not give up my distress. I better, you know, be miserable, you know, continue being miserable, otherwise I might lose my interest in devotional service. But that kind of masochistic mentality is not useful, it's not desirable either. To properly serve Krishna, we shouldn't be in distress. We should be peaceful and satisfied. Otherwise, we'll be thinking not about Krishna, but about our problems. The person in distress is mostly thinking about his own problems. So better not to be absorbed in our conscience should not be absorbed in our problems. That's a mature level. And we can give our attention to Krishna and his service instead. Even if my body is sick and there are problems in my life, but I don't become obsessed about them. I want to give my attention as much as possible to Krishna and his service. Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.